You know, the group that gets together, I don't know where they get together, but the lectionary group that picks our texts every year, I imagine them sitting down the Sunday after Easter and saying to themselves, what a great Sunday Easter was. Churches were packed all over the world, celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It was fantastic. What should we do as a follow-up? Let's talk about doubt. Every Sunday after Easter is the Doubting Thomas text. Every week, every year, I should say. In some ways, you know, the faith that we have naturally is one of the easiest things in the world. We all have faith, for example. We all use it without even thinking about it. Right now, some of you may even be planning what you're going to do following this worship service. Some of you may even be planning what your grocery list might look like after you leave church and where you're going to go to buy those groceries. So in one sense, having faith is as natural to us as simply breathing the air that we breathe in and out every day. If you plan for tomorrow, you have faith. But when we get to specifics, like the Christian faith, a specific type of faith, things get tricky, don't they? They don't stay as simple as that. To go and boldly proclaim that Jesus Christ is risen in bodily form takes chutzpah in this day and age when there are so many people saying, yeah, prove it to me. We live in a world that demands proof for just about everything that's asserted. And since faith is somewhat subjective, somewhat mystical, and somewhat mysterious, it is hard to get a very firm grip on what we call the Christian faith in any way that makes it provable. And as a result, it can easily seem like the life of faith leaves you feeling like you're hanging in midair at the end of some rope, and you have no idea what that rope is attached to, only that it's moving around in the breeze. And at the end of the day, how can you be certain, absolutely certain, about things like the resurrection, the afterlife, and our ultimate destiny? As Søren Kierkegaard, who was the great Danish philosopher, put it, for every single proof, there is some equal disproof. And yet it would seem that John's account of the resurrection attempts to do just that, to prove to us that the resurrection is real. In our lesson for today, we are told that the signs that Jesus did are recorded here in the Gospel of John so that you and I may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing, you may have life in his name. Unfortunately, that's just restating our problem, isn't it? For us, as people in the 21st century, we are just not moved by signs, not at least the kind of signs that moved the people in the first century. But it's not just a modern versus an ancient problem, like if we had better signs today, it might be easier to believe, for example. To a great extent, this problem of verification is built into our search in faith. The need to know, it's built into us. If it's faith, we can't prove it, can we? And if we can prove it, then what good is it? I think that's what Thomas's doubts are so appealing to so many people. We don't want a faith that merely consists in wishful thinking or in Hollywood happy endings or in smoke and mirrors that have tricked us into believing something that is not real. I guess that's why many of us tend to resonate in some way or another with Thomas's doubts. Yes, I have faith, but Lord, help my unbelief, like St. Augustine said. Even St. Paul recognized this dilemma for his church. And he says this in 1 Corinthians, if Christ has not been raised, then our faith is totally in vain. And we are most of all to be pitied. A lot, you see, is riding on whether something actually happened on that first Easter Sunday. If Easter was merely a symbol or a vision of some kind of spiritual experience that had no correspondence in this world to our physical bodies, then the victory that we proclaim over death wouldn't really matter at all. There are plenty of symbols out there. There are Easter bunnies. There are Easter eggs. You name it, you can find symbols for things. It doesn't make it real. Without Easter, what is there to distinguish the death of this one Jewish man from the countless other deaths that happened at the hands of cruel oppressors all over the world. Why does he stand out? Why should we pay attention to him? And while it's important that our faith rests on something more than wishful thinking, I'm afraid that all of our efforts to demonstrate that fall far short of being convincing. When it comes to faith, we just cannot present an airtight case. We cannot present an airtight case. It's not the way faith works. I couldn't trot it out as an argument in a court of law and convince 12 jurors of it. At the end of the day, when we approach these matters solely with our intellect and solely with our logic, it would seem that the doors to faith have been permanently shut and locked tight. Beyond a reasonable doubt. Isn't that what the courts call it? How do you present this beyond a reasonable doubt? So how do we find the faith to go out and live like God is working in this world to bring about grace and justice and peace and joy to our everyday lives? How do we live that way? And ironically, it's Easter that gives us our help. In some ways, that we simply will never, ever be able to sufficiently explain or prove, we continue to have the experience over centuries and millennia of the living Christ. For some reason, people keep having the experience. The same Jesus who surprised those first fearful disciples huddled behind locked doors of fear also surprises us who are locked behind doors of doubt. It's a dark world out there oftentimes. Who are we to blame them for locking themselves in, these disciples? After all, their lives were on the line. Have you ever met anybody like that? Anybody who's locked themselves in? They're afraid to go out. There's words for it. Agoraphobia, for one. A colleague of mine once said, "You don't have to knock very hard on any door in your parish, Stephen, to find some sort of agony lying right behind that shut door." Have you ever been locked in like that ever in your lives? Do you know somebody who has been locked in like that? Well, in her book, Any Day, A Beautiful Change, Catherine Presley describes what it's like to be locked into a prison of fear. And this pretty well gets at it. Fear, she says, is a physiological response to tomorrow. It's almost always about death. Fear causes us to live in a perpetual state of anxiety. Fear is exhausting. Fear leads us into depression. Generally, the calamities that I expect do not come to pass, and yet my body is being depleted all the while by fear. So I have to replace them with new ones, new fears, new anxieties, once the ones that I worried about didn't come true. Time and energy that could have been used constructively for prayer or for dishwashing or learning, I sacrifice to cultivate apprehension. That sounds like a lot of us, that we go from one fear to the next. Woody Allen put it in kind of a humorous way. He said, "Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me." And that's somewhat true. You can find truth in almost any doubt you have. Sometimes I think we have more faith in our fears than we do in God. We put more stock, we give more credence, we live behind locked doors. When somebody or something is locked in, somebody else has to be locked out. Have you ever been locked out? Has anybody kept you out? Locked out is how you feel when you read that you're a poverty statistic, I would imagine. How am I ever going to break out of this cycle? It's easy to point the finger and say what the problem is, but it's a harder thing to say how you're going to get out of that. And wondering how things will ever change if we continue with the way things are. Locked out is how those being discriminated feel when they look at the worlds that are open to those who aren't, right? When you don't have money, when you don't have resources, when you don't have the tools at your disposal, you've got to feel like you've been locked out of this society of ours. Have you or anybody you know ever been locked out? And yet, as our story tells us, there are no walls that are thick enough to keep Jesus out of the safe rooms that we and the disciples have created around our focus of fear. No room, no wall thick enough, no door tightly locked enough that Jesus can't come walking right through them. And it would seem that that is where the good news of hope is to be found, in a sense, that Jesus doesn't leave us alone in a locked room to our own devices. For while we can't move often beyond our fears and doubts because they have incapacitated us, the risen Christ can and does. If this were not so, then we would never see fearful people become courageous people, would we? We would never see people who have never led something suddenly become leaders. We would never see people who have never engaged in any social activity suddenly get involved for an issue that they care for. We would never see people who depend on others for fish become fishermen who feed other people themselves. We would never see those who are caught in poverty rise out of poverty if it was not for Jesus Christ's ability to break down walls of fear. Faith, my friends, is not easy. I'm talking about Christian faith, not the kind of faith that we plan every day to get up and go to work and so forth. I'm talking about Christian faith. The truth is that it never has been easy since the get-go. It wasn't easy for the first disciples who had every reason to believe and yet didn't. In some respects, we only find faith by having faith. You know? It's very much like setting out on a journey without ever knowing where you're exactly going to end up, like Abraham and Sarah. Good examples of what faith looks like in action. But the question we face is, how do we set out on that journey when we have so much doubt in front of us? And again, the answer is quite simple. Put one foot in front of the other. Simply start to walk. Walk in a new direction. Take one step and then take another step and see what happens. I think that if we are honest enough and courageous enough to face our fears squarely head on, we will wind up with a faith that ends up working for us, because it will be a faith that has dealt with our greatest fears, dealt with our greatest temptations, dealt with our greatest obstacles, and put them in their proper place and perspective. And most of us have found, by facing our doubts and fears head on, we have come into a deeper faith that really does make sense, that really does work and offer hope. One that says it's time to take that second and third step now, and the next, and the next, and the next, until you've reached your journey's end. It is miraculous, truly. Courageous, without a doubt. Amen.
It's one of my last Sundays here, so I figured I'd bring out one of my favorites.